Welcome to the Fifth Gate podcast. We've thrown around the idea of a podcast for years, but we finally made it happen, stuck in the truck together on a 10-hour road trip home from a horse show. Our passion is the Icelandic horse and all aspects of the worldwide community that surrounds this breed. Here, we come together as equestrian professionals to share our hardest lessons, biggest wins, and our future hopes in Icelandic horsemanship. Our conversations aim to educate, inspire, and grow all people like us who love Icelandic horses, from enthusiasts and amateurs to trainers, competitors, and field specialists. Welcome to you both to the Fifth Gate podcast. We're so excited to have you here today. We're going to go ahead and get started, and we're going to start with your personal story. And I have a question first for both of you, so you can choose in what order you answer. We always enjoy hearing about what made you you as a trainer. So could each of you share a moment from your childhood that you feel put you on a path to being a professional horse trainer? So something that made you not want to have horses just as your hobby, but made you want to have horses for your career.
Oh, okay.
That's a good one. Yeah, I've always been very interested in animals and behavior. As I remember, I started teaching the cat and dog all kinds of tricks. And then, of course, when I got my own horse, I started teaching him tricks as well. So I was very interested in teaching the horse something new and see how he learns and, you know, see that it works out well. And I think maybe there, like, the trainer aspect started. But, like, becoming a horse trainer, I think I didn't like anything else than working with horses and being around the horses. And when I was in school, I could only think about what I would like to do when I came home, what I was going to do with the horses. Like, I did not listen to the teachers because I could only think about this.
It was in your blood.
Yeah. I think so.
Isn't that a saying in Icelandic somehow that you're just kind of born with it in your blood?
Yes. I also can't say really when I decided to become a horse trainer. I've been with horses my whole life, just since I was a really small kid. Yeah, I don't know. I started training young horses rather young. And of course, the excitement just training a young horse and his difficulties and everything that just, just lured me in.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, it's also the fastest phase of training. It's the one where we see the most amount of progress, right? So it is a very engaging phase. Exactly. Also, there's sometimes some rodeo moments, so that can make it particularly exciting, I guess, especially as a younger rider. So, you're originally from the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
You aren't originally an Icelander, although it is really strange for you and I to be speaking English because we've always spoken Icelandic because we went to school together.
Uh-huh.
So this is a little weird feeling. You moved to Iceland. What brought you first to Iceland? When did you first start traveling to Iceland? And what made you stay and want to build a life in Iceland of all places, other than the horses, generally
I think the dream to go to Holar, the university, everything about training horses and, you know, it always caught my mind. This was just my goal, you know, like I want to go to Iceland and I would like to become a horse trainer. Like when I still lived in Holland, it was like a dream far away. I went to Germany to work on a horse farm over there and there I met him. Exactly. And then, you know, he already finished the first 2 years in Holland. He told me it's not that difficult for you to do it. So then I started thinking, like, this is something for me. I have to, you know, go for it. Once I went to Iceland and learned to know the horses here and the training methods and the culture, I didn't want to go back. Yeah.
How had you first heard about Holar?
So when I started riding Icelandic horses, I got this magazine. I always read this magazine, Eyfaxi.
Yeah.
We called it Eyfaxi in Dutch. We called it Eyfaxi in Dutch, yeah. and of course, there you could read everything about training the horses and Holar and everything and all the best riders that were interviewed, all the best Icelandic riders on world championships, you know, many of them, they went to whole life. So that's where I started thinking about, you know, this is what I need to do.
It, yeah, that brings back so many memories from my childhood.
Yourself,
because I also loved reading Aethaxy, and I hadn't even thought about that till you said that now.
No, exactly.
And all the interviews with the writers, that was like the old-fashioned social media. You could read about this training.
Yeah,
it's really fun. Harder, you began your career working quite extensively at Vatsleisu. And when I met both you and Jesse, you were living there and training. And how did working at Vatsleisu shape your training and also your breeding? Because many of your horses originate from those bloodlines.
Well, actually, quite a lot. It's just, first of all, the horses. You get inspired from riding really good horses, of course. And when you get to know them, when you learn on a really good horse, you learn a lot more.
For those people that don't know anything about Vatsleisu, what are Vatsleisu horses famous for?
Yeah, movements.
Movements.
Yeah.
Movements, just they have a lot of things.
A lot of show and...
X-factor.
It's really fun to ride. Yeah. Loose shoulder.
Part of what drew you to them originally?
No, actually not. It was actually a more funny story. I never actually planned to go there.
No way, really?
No, it was not really a plan. I was finished my first year in Holland, and then I wanted to start to work for Mette and Gisli. And at that time, they didn't really have a stable, so they were renting a part of the stable in Vatsleisu. So then I ended up working half a day for Mette and Gisli and half a day for Pearson Artis in Vatsleisu. And then it turned out that they didn't really need a trainer, Mette and Gisli, because they were starting to build their new stable, what they bought. So they were not going to train much horses. Yeah, they offered me that I could still come, but I wanted to train horses, so I stayed in Vatsleisu. So that's actually how it began.
You have a couple mares that you're breeding now in your breeding program at Gröf that are from Vatsleisu breeding. Are there particular things that you're looking to see in your breeding moving forward that come from the Vatsleisu bloodlines?
Of course, these movements, this X factor. And what I really like about them is this lightness.
Light stepping, light on.
Light stepping, light to ride. A lot of energy, but still under control.
With both of you, could you give me a horse that is the most important horse in your career as a horse person to you? And it can be for either a good or a bad reason.
Oh.
I name one. It was the mare called Mist. I rode her in Holland, competed on her a lot. She was like my main competition horse, and we went to world championships 2 times in the youth classes. And she was the horse that made me realize that this was really my, this was going to be my road, you know. She gave me direction.
I remember seeing her in 2007.
Yeah.
Could that be correct?
Yeah.
And you were a young rider?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember her fast tempo was incredible.
She was really amazing, yeah. Really good horse. Yeah.
Was she an easy horse to ride or
she was powerful. And I think at that time I had a little trouble handling her power. It would have been fun to have her now again, train her again. But I think we would always say that with all horses. But yeah, she had a lot of power, and I think I learned a lot from her, like how to handle the power and
And for you, Harderli, is there a horse that you feel like particularly defined you, good or bad?
But there's one horse that really close to me. It's Lina from Vatsleisu, a Klampe daughter. Really good one. But I only got one competition season with her, and then we lost her. Yeah, she was on Landsmót 2011. She was a four-getter. On Landsmót, I was only riding her tilt. Went really good. Got really good marks, but of course I was unlucky and I was in 11th place in the yeah, how do you call it? The dead place?
It's what we call the dead place, yeah, here in Iceland. I don't know if you have a word for it in English.
I don't think we do, but I'm totally fine with that terminology. It is definitely the most frustrating place to end up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This was really sad because it was a really good test. And yeah, I was hoping to go further, but
yeah,
still.
And it's sad to say that she died only a few months after Lasmod, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. He was preparing her for breeding show. Yeah. She got a colic and they didn't know what happened. Why?
So yeah. Moving on to shop talk and talking a little bit about training, because that's what you all do day in and day out. We've been lucky to train and work with many horses that were started under saddle by you both. You all seem to give youngsters a very good foundation. They come out of your program very mentally and physically balanced, ready to take a journey to the USA, for example. What would you say are some core principles in your young horse starting program or training approaches that you feel help give youngsters a good start under saddle?
You can.
First of all, is start to work with a young horse is discipline. And discipline, I don't mean any rough thing, just that you can work together, but discipline.
Yeah.
Then I mean, also when you just stand with a horse on the walkway and you want to brush him and anything, he should just wait for you. Mm-hmm. But he should not wait for you because he's scared to move. This is number one. Just in everything you do, there should be this kind of discipline in the training.
Mm.
And then, of course, lightness. Yes, smoothness.
Well, lightness is a part of discipline because it's that responsiveness and clear communication, right?
Exactly. Immediately, if the discipline is not good enough, that means that you can have a lot of misunderstanding.
Exactly. I think. Like the rules have to be clear. Like the horse has to know what he can expect from you, and you know what to expect from the horse to avoid any misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Because that is often the problem. When there are problems in training, it's because of misunderstanding, often. Especially here, we're working with young horses that are often that haven't been touched before, so you can see their true nature. And they have to learn, we have to learn their language and they have to learn our language. So we have to be able to communicate together. Yeah, when we start a young horse, we have this like certain system that we work with. Like it's always the same. Every step is the same with every young horse. And of course, every young horse is different, but still we try to like get through every step together.
What does that process look like? Would you mind describing that a bit?
First, we just teach them to, we have this small little riding hall, 10 by 10. It has, it's not a round pen, but just with corners. Mm. And first of all, we teach them to run around free in this little riding hall. And in the beginning, they start turning around you, or they don't want to go forward, or you have to teach them forward means forward. And one direction.
Mm-hmm.
They're not supposed to turn away from you.
And we try to make sure that they always turn to us, that when we have a rope on them later, that they rather want to turn to you, not against you.
Exactly. Yeah. So then the day after we start teaching them on the halter and rope, and then we keep on. Every day we add one little step. And
unless there are difficulties.
Of course, yeah.
There are big difficulties that, of course, we don't, even if we manage to do what we wanted to do, and if it's really difficult, then it's better to take an extra day, do it again.
Do it again until it goes good, like good enough, and then you take the next step. And just by adding a one little step every time, it gets easier for the horse as well. It's like when I go to university, when I started in Hola, I thought like, wow, all these third year students, they did all these clinics and they did it very well. Like, wow, I'm never going to be able to do it this good.
We can of course divide this into really, really big parts. But the main thing is you just add on every day. First loose, then maybe the halter, then maybe with a halter and a rope, and then on and on, you get the bridle on, you get the saddle on without stirrups, and so on. And it really depends on, of course, every horse a little bit, but the steps are the same. You can maybe go a little bit faster, but you never go that fast that you have to go back.
Yeah, it's like getting the horse to feel comfortable with the step, and then keep on with the next step. But of course, there are also horses that are not comfortable with it, but they still have to learn to, you know, keep on. Like, we also read the characters. You have this horse that is, like, confident, but still a bit stressy. And then you have the type that is not confident and stressy. And these two types, they don't learn the same.
It is interesting. I think that's the true art of horsemanship. There's a colt starter here named Guy McLean, and I was watching him teach a demo once, and he was saying the art of training is challenging a little bit, but not too much, right? And always challenging a little bit. And he gave the example, you know, you're learning multiplication for the first time. So someone asks you, what's 2 times 2? And it's maybe hard. And you kind of guess a little bit, and then you find out 4. And then they ask you again, what's 2 times 2? And you say 4. And what's 2 times 2? And 4. And 2 times 2? And 4. And 2 times 2? And I don't know, 8, right? Yeah, and I think a lot of training problems happen where, like, you ask the same question too many times or too few times.
Exactly. That's
also what Jesse was trying to tell before, that we try to keep the whole group of young horses, if, let's say we have 10 or 15, then we try to keep them on the same level.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's dressy or if it's really lazy. We try to keep them all on the same level, because it's actually easier when you have more. Then you don't go too slow with the dressy ones, and you don't go too fast with the lazy ones.
Yeah.
I love
you keep them all. They all go through the same system then.
Would you say one of the things when I talk to you all about training that it seems like you really value is forward momentum, like riding forward? How soon do you ride the horses out of the arena generally? And how do you preserve and instill that forward flow of energy?
That's really different when you go outside. But
when we're talking about
four to 6 weeks.
A normal young horse, a good student. Like 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah.
It can be many, many reasons why it's 4 and why it's 6. In some cases, you have a easy horse, but you don't want to go out too soon because it's not really working good with you on the bit, for example. And if you go out too soon and the horse might want to go more forward than you actually want, then you have to use a bit more. And then you get them on the bit. So we try to give them more time to learn on the bit. And also with the horses that are afraid and so on.
Yeah, so it's always about, like, not teaching the horse that he can go against the aids, you know. And to be able to ride them good outside, I want to have them, like, they have to go good forward. They have to be relaxed. Yeah, and then direction. I have to be able to tell them pretty much, like, left or right, and they have to listen, like, right the whole track, and then change over the diagonal when they can do that, and I can slow them down and go forward, and I can, like, ride pretty much, like, you know, I feel free in the saddle, and I can push them pretty good forward without them getting scared or whatever, or, you know, then I think it's time to go out. And I think often it's good to go outside with another horse in front. But with some type of horses, it's maybe sometimes better to go alone. Especially the horses that are very confident. And maybe when they are a bit stressy or anything, it's still good to take them alone, because then they stay more with me. The confident horses, they often don't care about the horse in front.
One final question on the young horse starting front. With youngsters, you've said to me in the past that you really avoid fear or panic in the horses.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of your training. Could you talk a little bit about that and how you do that, or what and why?
can be a little bit difficult to explain because this has a lot to do with just you work.
Your timing.
Yeah, you're working on time. You're working with feeling. Mm. Just how you feel the horse and everything, and then you work with him there to just try to get the horse to be with you. And of course, there's a lot of work, but groundwork mostly, it starts there to get this fear away. Just that the horse accepts you.
The bending.
Yeah, when you're working with him, the age and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you also come back to the what I was saying before, this discipline, what I think is so important, that the horse learns to wait for you. And then, of course, that it's clear, it's never that the horse is afraid of you. That's why it's disciplined. That's really important. It has to be disciplined because he really wants to stay with you.
He feels safer.
Yeah, he feels safe and wants to stay and wait for you what's next and so on.
And like when they go in this panic mode, they stop learning. It's really hard to, you know, you cannot teach them anything when they go into this panic mode. And that's also where it can become dangerous. If they start running or bucking, or of course we have to take care of ourselves as well. Like, and for the horse, it's just really important that it feels safe and just comfortable with us. Once they learn to go into this panic feeling, it can also stick to them for a while.
If it happens so early in the training, then it's really can be difficult to get it away.
Yeah.
This is just a fun question for each of you. What is your favorite gait to train and why?
Trust.
Yeah. If it goes really fast, I don't care. I'll trot the pace. Favorite gait to train? Pace.
Pace. So pace and told. Pace for her, told for Jesse.
Yeah.
Why, Jesse? Why told?
It's comfortable.
We're getting old and our backs are bad.
Yeah. He loves pace competition and five gate. And I love to watch told competition and ride told competition because I love to see and to feel the energy of the horse in slow collected tempo and then speed up with a lot of energy and then go back to slow collected tempo, like when the horse is really sensitive on this and is fast tilt. Of course I learned it from the mare I was talking about, Miss, is just really cool.
Why do you think you're drawn to five gate, Herder?
I really like to go fast and have a lot of moments. And just gives you this kick. That's also why I said not really a certain gait, but a really cool five gate horse with all gates really fast and speed.
Yeah.
And movements, that's really cool.
Of course, Carrie, it depends on the horse. And,
and I think most people that have went really good sprint and pace, they know this little bit kick what you get when you finish.
There's nothing like it. There's genuinely nothing like it. All three of us went to Holar University. That's how I know you all. How did Holar benefit you as a trainer and instructor? I know for all of us that really shaped our journey. What were the main benefits? And then also, were there some things that you maybe look back on and don't use anymore, or you've really shifted your training away from? So kind of the good from Holar and the maybe less good from Holar.
What I learned the most is like training with some kind of structure. Often I have these moments that I think back like, now I remember why Mette told me this, you know, like, wow, or with this horse, now I realize how I should do it. Or, you know, these moments I get very often, the steps from the beginning to the end. But of course, when you're training a lot of horses, then it's not always like this. I'm not always training them exactly with this structure. I mean, sometimes I go from A to G to E to B, you know, I have to a little bit go back and forth. But to be able to do that, you have to know the correct row, how to build up a horse. Because when you train a horse and you find a problem, you feel a problem and you have to fix it, doesn't matter if it's like a pacey tilt or a behavior problem, or, you know, it always helps to go back to all these steps that we've learned in Holar. Like, is he relaxed? Is it easy to bend him? Like, then you can find the problem. you can find like the stage of where you should work on and keep on again. And
I sometimes joke that. Yeah, agreed. I sometimes joke that I first, when I graduated, I was a little Hola robot, right? And it was one, two, and three.
Exactly.
And then as the years progressed, you start to be a bit more creative. And you're still using the same principles, but like you said, you might be adjusting a little bit based on the horse. Yeah, was that the same for you, Herder, that you feel like you learned a system, but then you also have gotten more creative?
Mm-hmm. Of course, I learned really much in Holland. I learned before Holland, I was already starting to train young horses and not training a lot, but there I got more discipline. Mm-hmm. And I always remember one thing which changed a lot for me, that they always taught me what, why, and how.
Mm-hmm.
Only it doesn't matter what you're training, what you're trying to fix. If you always think about these things, you will always find a solution. So that's really important. So I think, first of all, this discipline and just more professional.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is more professional. Before I could get through problems, but it was not so professional before I learned it.
You also
in Hola.
You did something and it worked, and you actually didn't know exactly why, you know?
Why part is huge. Here in the US, we don't have really any schools that are similar to Hola. There are a lot of horse colleges, but they're all equine science focus.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's a bit of training incorporated into that, or equine management incorporated into that. There aren't schools that specialize in teaching horsemanship and training and ridden instruction like at Holland.
Okay. Also not in the other disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
No, wow.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really exist in the way that Holler does, especially with the focus both on teaching and training and really practical teaching and training skills. There's a lot of focus on the equine sciences, like equine nutrition or biology, those things that put most students on the track to become a vet.
Yeah,
there's actually very few programs that, well, really aren't any programs that have that focus for training horse trainers. So that's why I think people are so interested to hear about Holar and how it shapes us. Because Icelandic horse trainers, many of us that come from that university, have a much stronger foundation and systems, the systems that we share.
Absolutely.
I know when a horse comes from you all that it's going to have certain knowledge and certain skills because we share that background. One of the things that I've really appreciated purchasing horses and bringing horses to the U.S. from you all and from your program is that I feel like you're both very good at describing horses' character, really explaining like what a horse is going to be like.
Yeah.
So I maybe have never met the horse, never ridden the horse, but when I ride them for the first time, what I feel is what you guys described to me. And my question for you is, what would you describe as the ideal character in a horse?
Oh.
So what is your favorite for each of you? What is your favorite type of character that you really like to train? And then also, what is the biggest character fault a horse can have? So let's start with like your favorite type of character in horses.
They can be sensitive, a bit sensitive. The ones that are like eager to learn, and I mean they can also be a bit stubborn and difficult, but as long as they learn and I can teach them to stay with me and I can train them, it's fun.
So you like them to have their own personality a bit?
Yes, they can have their
and I really like them if they are a little bit electric. but I gotta say, for breeding, our breeding, for example, we are not really focused on that.
No,
because that's not horses for everyone.
Exactly.
I like that.
Yeah. Me too.
A little bit electric, and so what we always said here in Iceland, it's a one man's horse.
What are you breeding for?
we're of course breeding horses what we can sell. And also horses that we like, of course. But they are not. Then of course they don't have these.
No.
What you should just call problems.
But I think that like the character that we like to breed is just horses that are reliable. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's the best. Like, they have to be
ones
reliable.
That are honest.
They have to be honest. They have to really be important. Like, they can be a little bit difficult when we start them, but they have to be honest and they have to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think you can see that quickly, like how they think and how they learn. But on the other hand, like the horses that start slowly, they often, you know, when they have a good character and they are willing to learn, they just come, the willingness comes on its own. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Do you feel like willingness often develops through the training, especially
yeah,
through the
definitely.
Young horse starting?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely develops the understanding.
Yeah, they learn to act to your aids, yeah.
What do you think is the biggest character fault? If you have a horse that is like this, that's really concerning to you or a big problem.
Yeah, the ones that are not honest.
Yeah. Not honest. And then just when they show some dangerous stuff.
Like, especially when they don't show exactly how they feel, and then you get the, you know,
so they aren't showing you their emotions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're in a transition to the future of horsemanship, so that's our final set of questions. You all have a top 4 gated stallion, Eldur,
mm-hmm.
who we had the pleasure of training several of his offspring that we exported to the U.S. that are incredible. I can really testify to their character.
Mm-hmm.
But Eldur is genetically AC, so he's mm-hmm. a 4 gator, correct?
Yep.
So he has one copy of that C allele, which means that we're kind of preserving the C gene by breeding to him. Why do you think it's important within the Icelandic horse breed to keep AC horses? What has been your experience with that?
Yeah, first of all, just to keep this basic gates.
Good separated gates. Yeah, suspension.
Yeah, that's really important because often if you don't use this on... that they have this suspension,
mm-hmm.
then it will, of course, go.
Mm.
And then in the breeding.
In the breeding, yeah, exactly. So, like, yeah, because it helps to keep the gates separate.
Separated, yeah.
Separated.
Yeah, you say that. We actually don't have a lot of terms in English for a 5-gated horse or describing gates. So your best guess is just as good as ours. But yeah, separated.
Yeah, I think this, the gates, the basic gates and everything. And of course, the best is to mix it, all of it.
Yeah.
Of course, the outcome can be a top 5 gator, top pace horse, top 4 gator, top tilt horse.
Yeah.
Really often they say that the best tilt horse is exactly in the middle. Is this typical
what
we call AA 4 gator?
Yeah,
gotcha.
That's often the best tilt horse.
Like the 4 gator that is not ridden with pace, but genetically has pace.
When you're breeding Eldur, are you careful to only breed him to 5 gators, or do you also breed him to 4 gated mares?
We don't use CA.
Yeah, we take care of that.
Because that might lead to CC, and then you have a really less tilt. Or maybe no tilt.
Yeah.
but we don't really focus on if they are... 4-gated or 5-gated.
Mm.
It just really depends on how the horses are, the quality of the gates, and so on.
Exactly, yeah.
Of course, I would not put on purpose a really trotty mare to him, even if he's not a CA.
Yeah.
Because, that's a risky, it gets trotty. So, yeah.
This is a little bit of an aside, but here in the US, there are a lot of gated horse breeds that are very, very pacey. Because they don't train the walk, trot, and canter.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is those breeds are only AA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As in they've totally lost the C out of their population for the most part. So that's led to really, really pacey horses. So I know some people here in the US, as taboo as it is, that are in those gated breeds other than Icelandics, mm-hmm. and they want to crossbreed to Icelandics because we've actually preserved those C genes. And a really curious thing is those breeders want to, in the other gated breeds, they only want to see the foals trot out in the field.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
because otherwise they're going to be really pacey when they're started on their saddle.
Okay.
And many Icelandic horse breeders, we want to see them tolt, right?
Yeah.
Because if they're only trotting out in the field, that's usually not always the best sign. What are your feelings on that? Do you watch your foals? And what do you think about that?
Yeah. There's one thing about this trotty. We do, of course, we don't want them trotty.
Yeah.
But what we look at, if the foals go straight from walk to trot, I think that's more likely to be trotty than the foal that shows a little bit bigger, longer strides, almost tilt and then trot.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to go tilt, but then you
see like a tilty walk. Yeah.
Then you see it's a smooth four-getter.
Yeah, yeah.
But these trotty horses, they really go just from walk straight to trot with a lot of suspension.
Yeah. But I've experienced this, like starting a young horse, and I never saw it tilting on its own in the field. Mm-hmm. And starting him, and like, of course, I had to teach him to go tilt, but then he did not, it wasn't difficult to get him into the tilt.
Mm-hmm.
So like, sometimes you they are hiding it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But of course, like our breeding goal is not to breed a CA horse. Like, we would like to breed a either 5-gate or like 4.5-gated horse. They are like the 4.5-gated horses, they are very popular also to sell.
Yes.
Because they have easy, smooth tilt and good basic gates. And often those horses are good 4-gated horses. Yeah. And of course, 5-gated horses are good as well.
They're just easier to ride than the pure 4-gators because tolls are more accessible.
Exactly.
What is the most common issue you address as horse trainers training such a large volume of horses in the north? You guys train many horses each year. You start many youngsters each year. What frustrates you the most?
What frustrates us the most?
That it's really hard to make money in the horse industry? No.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a good one.
Yeah, but in training, I think
what
is mostly frustrating is when you get a problem, not a particular one, but if you get a problem that should be easy to solve, but you can't solve it quickly. That sometimes happens when you get a horse and they are just, I don't know, blocked.
Yeah.
It takes a long.
Yeah, and of course.
I would not say a particular problem.
Of course, it takes a long time now, but also maybe like when you train your own horses, you can take the time you want. You can give them a break anywhere when you want, and you can just give them more time also in the training itself. And when you train for other people, it has to keep on, and you have to like reach certain goals all the time. You're like, people expect you to make the horse better and better and better, and yeah, so there's always some kind of pressure, of course, when you train horses for other people.
That's something that's been discussed more and more. Do you feel like people are more accepting of training taking a longer time when it's done well? Or do you still feel like there's a lot of pressure to get it done more quickly?
No. If I just think back when I started really training young horses, it has changed a lot. People really understand that it takes time. If you want a good trained horse, it takes time.
Especially when they like experience that the time that you invest in the horse, it gives them something, you know.
I think also most times when the people are not really happy how fast that it's going too slow is because the horse is probably not as good as they hope.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Then in the beginning they just not happy that you're not pushing it further and not fast enough, but of course in the end they realize, okay,
it's just not
good. The horse is not that good. He needs more time. It's not coming that fast.
Exactly. Then the horse goes to another trainer and he hears the same. Exactly.
I don't think people are really pushing you to train faster.
Getting back to the point that you suggested, of course, it's a lot of work and not so much money. So, that's, of course, we are doing this because we love it. We love the training. We love this way of living. It's a lifestyle. You have to be in it 24/7, 7 days a week, almost.
And that is perhaps the frustrating part, because I know many of my clients, they want to give their horses time and training, but they also don't have money to pay for that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there is a push-pull there of we're all always under pressure of time, even if we know better or want better, right?
Yeah.
Do you find that the really, really well-bred horses are easier to train?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a very quick yes.
The biggest difference in the last, just, I don't know, 25 years, the biggest difference is the conformation of the horse. And the conformation has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not only the conformation, but mainly, and also how we race the horses has changed so much that they are so much more developed to carry. And then I mean also just to carry themselves on the rider. You don't have to change so much.
Yeah.
You just have to teach them how. Or what you want, actually.
Yeah.
There's a really huge change there in the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years.
Yeah. It's a big plus when the horse has a strong top line and good ability to carry the rider. And when he has the, you know, gates, very easy separated, good gates and clear bitted, then it's not so difficult to get them on a higher level in a rather short time. And when the character is good as well, it's like, that's the perfect horse, you know?
Absolutely. So with horses today, is there something that you feel needs particular improvement? Just generally, is there so we've made horses that have better conformation, as you said, better gaits, better character too in some cases. Is there something that you wish breeders would focus more on moving forward?
I think Iceland is pretty much on a good in a good direction with breeding.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Got this.
Yeah. They only get better and better, these horses. So, yeah.
What
I also like about the Icelandic horse is we're breeding a four-gated horse, a five-gated horse, a tilt horse, a children horse, a working horse, a pace horse. You know, we have so many types in this breed, different types. And yeah, you cannot really tell, like, this is the perfect horse, you know. Like, we just have so many different types and all have their qualities and good things and bad things, I think, yeah.
I've actually come to believe that that is part of what has kept the breeds so good.
Exactly.
Many breeds end up with such a narrow breeding goal that it actually hurts everything else. While Icelandic horses, we have all these different roles, from the pace racers to the four gators, the tilt horses, the riding horses, the trekking horses, right? So there are all these different roles, and we appreciate all the different roles. So that leads to more possible outcomes and less single trait breeding risks.
We shouldn't forget the different riders as well.
No.
Yeah. One rider wants a sensitive horse, the other one wants a very solid, easy, calm horse. And, you know, we are also different. So it's really cool that there are so many different types that we can choose from.
There's a lot of variability within the breed.
Yeah.
I have one last question for you all, and that is, how do you see horse training specifically changing in the next 20 years?
AI.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
We've been thinking about this. How are they going to solve this with AI?
I don't think it's coming for our job anytime soon.
Yeah.
I think this question is really difficult to answer. If you just think about where we stand today how good trainers we have everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you go just 10 years back, you would never believe that we would be here today.
No, exactly.
Mm. So it's really difficult to say.
Yeah.
What's coming next?
Yeah, but I'm a little bit worried about, you know, these people, like non-horse people, that are against training horses because it's bad for the horses. And I hope we're not gonna get into this direction.
How do you think we can win those people over?
Yeah, by just educating them. Actually proving that it's not bad, as they say. Proving that this is okay to ride horses.
Yeah, get more data to back what we're doing and show what we're doing.
Yeah.
We've had a theme of young horse starting in this. One of the things that they'll probably be testing is indications of stress.
Yeah.
And one of the problems I have with stress as a metric is stress doesn't always have to be bad. Like we discussed, training needs to progress. You have to push the horse a little bit. And that's also a rewarding process. It's just like with our children. We don't want our children to never experience any difficulties because doesn't prepare them for life. Absolutely. So we don't want our horses to never experience stress because that won't prepare them for life as a riding horse.
Yeah.
So we need to stress them a little bit, but not too much. And there's this delicate balance there. Do you think we're doing a pretty good job of that? Or do you think we push too hard a lot of the time? And how do you think we explain that to people, right? Because that's kind of a tough thing to really explain. Do you have any ideas on that?
Good question.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Of course, sometimes we do too less, a little bit too much. But that's where we find out where the limit
where
is.
Where the middle is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes you have to push a little bit more and then you notice, not this way. You have to wait a little bit longer and so on. You will never get anywhere if you never push.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
So that's also
fragile. But how are we explaining this to the people that are against? Yeah.
I think that's the challenge is that what I always tell my students is you have to give yourself a little grace to experiment so you find that middle ground. Exactly like you're saying, Hörður.
Yeah.
But also I understand that could be perceived in a bad light. We'll just have to leave that for future figuring out.
Yeah.
I know it's super late there. I really appreciate you guys talking to me. I know English is not a fun language to be interviewed in when it's neither of your...
You're an Icelandic.
It'd be so much easier in Icelandic. But it is the language of the world, so we're stuck with it.
Thank you for listening to the Fifth Gate podcast. I know you've heard this on other channels, but it really is so important that you like and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening through, or all of them for that matter. We would also love to hear from you on social media. So please send us ideas, suggestions, let us know what you're enjoying right now so we can continue to make content you want to watch and hear. Thank you again for your support, and we will see you next time on the next episode of the Fifth Gate Podcast.